Mr. Olmstead.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. A person's sentence in federal court should not depend on the fortuity of whether charges are brought together or separately in different jurisdictions. The trial court in this case abused its discretion in applying United States Sentencing Guidelines Section 5G1.3, not making Mr. Bang Sing Thong's federal sentence concurrent with his Illinois state sentence for an offense that was included in relevant conduct.
Counsel, I must say I don't understand why you care, or indeed why your client perceives himself as aggrieved by this. The district judge wants the defendant to spend 20 years in prison, and he's already got a 10-year state sentence. There are two things the judge could do. One is he could say 20 years concurrent, or he could say 10 years consecutive. They come to the same thing. And I should think a defendant would want the judge to say 10 years consecutive, because then if the state sentence is reduced or set aside, his total amount of prison time goes down. Whereas if the judge says 20 years concurrent and the state sentence is set aside, defendant is still in for the same amount of time. So on the one hand, I don't understand why this matters, except that it may be beneficial to the defendant that the sentence is consecutive. But what am I missing something here?
No, well, there's no attack pending against the state sentence. But
pardon?
There's no attack pending against the state sentence or contemplated. But the effect of the trial court's sentence was to make his overall sentence 230 months.
Right. So you might say a 230-month effective sentence is unreasonably long for this crime. I mean, that would be the right line of argument. But that doesn't turn on whether the 230 months was got at using concurrent or consecutive sentences. It would matter if the maximum federal sentence was less than 230 months, and the judge said, I'm making it consecutive so that even though the federal max is, say, 120 months, I can gross it up to 230 total. But here, the federal maximum is way over 230 months, so the total of state and federal together is within the federal maximum. That's why I'm puzzled about why this would be anything other than a benefit for the defendant.
Because it's the defendant's position that the effect of the sentence, if you viewed it that way, if you disregarded concurrent consecutive and simply viewed it as a 230-month sentence.
It's a 230-month federal sentence.
The 230-month federal sentence on the facts of this case would be unreasonable.
Why?
It would be an abuse of discretion.
Why?
Because all of the aggravating factors that the trial court set out as a basis to make such a large sentence were considered in the sentencing guidelines that created the range in the first place.
You know, that kind of argument goes nowhere under Rita and Gall. It would have been an argument before Kimbrough, Rita, and Gall, but it's not an argument now. You could say something like the district judge mangled the statutory factors or failed to consider one of the statutory factors, but I didn't see that argument in your brief.
No, that's correct.
And just the observation that this amounts to an upward departure from the sentencing guidelines is today, well, that $2.50 will get you a cup of coffee.
It is a difficult issue. I wouldn't say it's anything different. It's not an absolute argument anymore. It is an argument that depends on a more fungible standard of reasonableness. That's true. And the argument is that the guideline range and what it gives you and the consideration that it gave to the aggravating factors gives you an idea of what reasonableness looks like. That's the argument. And what the trial court did here, if you set aside even the issue of the application of the guideline and concurrent consecutive, is reach a sentence that was unreasonably high. It went far up from what the range would have been, and it went there for reasons that were not.
The guideline range was 151 to 188.
That's correct.
Right. So he's gone 42 months above the top of the guideline range, and he did that by imposing a federal sentence, technically, of 88 months, right?
That's correct.
So given Rita and Gall, why is a 42-month increase unreasonable? As I say, I didn't see any argument in your brief, and I haven't heard it yet, that he neglected or countermanded one of the statutory factors.
Not making that argument.
Yeah.
The argument is that based on the facts of this case and the aggravating factors that were and weren't present, that kind of movement upward resulted in an unreasonable sentence. And essentially what it is an application of 5G 1.3 that didn't make sense under the facts of this case.
I thought, speaking of 5G 1.3, that the district judge thought, because he had this other offense as well, the making a shiv or whatever it was out of his toothbrush, that he was under subpart C. So there was not just the overlap. There were other undischarged terms of imprisonment. So he had full discretion to structure the sentence any way he wanted to.
I don't believe that there's an express finding. Certainly the government argued in that regard. But if anything, looking at the transcript as a whole, and again, there is no specific finding. I think that's a procedural error. But it seems that what the trial court did was say, looking at this, I'm going to not even think about the concurrent consecutive and think instead of this case in terms of an overall sentence. Looking back, Mr. Banks and Thong, to December 6th of 2002, when you were arrested and taken into custody in Decatur.
I'd like you to clarify something, and that is, Judge Wood mentioned that additional 3 years for the prison shift or whatever it was. The gun-related conviction and sentence is what is, at least to the extent that it's already served, that's what's concurrent. Is that correct?
Under the trial court's order,
yes.
The trial court's order made what sentence had already been served concurrent with the federal sentence, but then the federal sentence consecutive to the overall, which included the 3 years.
So it's consecutive to that 3 years in addition.
Yes, okay, it is.
And goes beyond that. All right,
that's
I'm
correct.
To clarify that.
Yes, he was given an overall expected parole date of June of 2014.
Okay.
That is correct. And that brings up a point, and in fairness to the government, there's an error in the reply brief in referring, it's an aside comment really, about the state or the government's reference to a firearms offense, which resulted, frankly, in my misreading of their argument. And I'd ask the court to disregard that comment. What you have is a pre-sentence report in this case that reads exactly as it would read if the bank robbery in Decatur were brought in federal court in the first instance. There are three groups for the three bank robberies. The conspiracy takes the Decatur bank robbery in and makes it part of its group and heightens its penalty, and it drives the sentencing in this case because it is the highest offense level. It resulted in a 7-level increase for firearm discharge, a 2-level increase for obstruction of justice. 5G 1.3b just clearly applied, and everybody agreed, the parties agreed, and the trial court adopted that idea that the proper sentence in this case was 151 months of the guideline range. And the effect of what the trial court did in creating a sentence of around 19 years total, 230 months, didn't make sense under the facts of this case. The aggravating factors that were cited by the court, guns being involved, that elevated the sentencing range drastically. Violence was cited. In fact, no one was injured. Shots were fired, and only in the case that was the subject of the state prosecution, and it was considered in elevating the range substantially. People were frightened. Certainly people were frightened. There was no evidence of any counseling or treatment for emotional harm, no physical harm. One person reported being frightened but angry and relieved. One bank vice president indicated he didn't think the gun was real. The crimes were horrible, certain. The trial court's word was horrendous, certainly qualifies. But they weren't horrendous in a way that elevated Mr. Banksingthong's offense above a bank robbery, considering all the factors and developing the range that had been developed. The trial court's determination, I believe the record would show, is instead based on an improper, almost territorial view of the federal case, of a fear that if good time were lost, the federal sentence would be swallowed up, a fear that three bank robberies would result in very little punishment because the state got there first. That didn't make sense. A day served is a day served. And the overall sentence that the trial court reached in this case was unreasonable and an incorrect application of the guidelines. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. Mr. Hartzler.
Mr. Hartzler, I see the government is trying to get its money's worth out of your trip today.
Yes, well, I've done this before, Judge Wood, and anything we can do to save taxpayer dollars, of course.
admirable.
I appreciate your noticing. I actually.
It looked like the SEC sent the entire general counsel's office to see the Koenig case argued, however.
They may have a larger budget. All kidding aside, I understand that it might be an imposition to have one lawyer ill-prepared on four cases come up here, but I appreciate the court's scheduling me for four cases. I'll be back for three in January. It's a tremendous convenience, personally. I think the best way to look at this case or to resolve it is to first decide whether or not it's within guidelines sentence. The defendant's argument is that only subsection B should have applied, but you could almost teach a guidelines clinic or a clinic on 5G1.3 with this case. A applies if you have an undischarged sentence that is not relevant conduct. We have that with the prison shiv offense. Subsection B applies if you have an undischarged sentence that is relevant conduct. We have that with the firearms discharge offense. And C applies if you have a combination. So you can run through all three of the subsections, explain them all, and come up with a conclusion that the government came up with and the judge apparently came up with, which is that subsection C applies. Then once subsection C applies, what do? He applied a combination of A and B, gave credit for the time that had been served up to that date, which was 62 months and 7 days. That left 88 months and 23 days, and applied at that point subsection A, making it consecutive. So a within-guideline sentence is presumed to be reasonable. And if you conclude, as I do, this is a within-guideline sentence because it applies directly under 5G1.3C, judge then fashioned a sentence that combined A and B features, came up with a reasonable sentence. I will invite questions, but I did want to make one final point, which is that the reply brief indicates that he got more time by being charged in state and federal court than he would have had he been only charged in federal court. And that's very unfair. You've seen enough of these cases involving various crimes where you know that the government would have charged a 924C discharging of the firearm. We would have charged 18-924C for that discharge of the firearm during the final bank robbery. And that would have added an automatic consecutive 10 years to his sentence in federal court. So it's a little misleading to suggest he would have been better off than he ended up had he been charged entirely in federal court. That's just not correct. If there are no further questions, I'll return the remainder of my time to the court.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Olmstead?
No, Your Honor, unless the court has questions.
No. Thank you very much, and we appreciate your willingness to take the appointment in this case. You've been of assistance both to your client and to the court. The case is taken under advisement.